Tom McCallan.
I believe, as I always have, that whether it's in society or in sport, intent is impossible to determine. In most situations.
Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590.
It is Monday, April 18th, 2011. The radio program is on the air coast to coast on the Fan Radio Network, on Sirius 97, and on Rogers Sportsnet, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. This is Primetime. I'm Bob McCallan. This is a first for me, I think, a first period. It is the presidential summit. For the first time, certainly on this program. The presidents of the three major sports franchises in Toronto gathered in one room. To my left, the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, Paul Beeston. Across the table, the president and general manager of the Toronto Raptors, Brian Colangelo. And to my right, the president and general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Brian Burke. Gentlemen, it's been like herding cats to get you three in the room at the same time. But it's a thrill for everybody, and I know the audience is looking forward to this this next hour. The I've got a few questions, a few things to throw around. I'm not sure where this conversation is going to go, but in an ideal scenario, as I said to the guys off the top of the show, if we can generate some conversation between you three, I think that's what the audience really wants to hear. But let me begin with this. Beast, I'll throw it to you first because I usually go clockwise around the table. Which of the three you do you think has the toughest job?
Well, I mean, there's no question that it's not me. because we have a general manager that these guys are on the firing line every day. You know, when I look at what's happening right now and I look at what Brian and Brian are going through, I mean, they have tough decisions to make. So when I look at what I have to do, I mean, we've got Alex there. As we're building the team, we made a decision 2 years ago to cut back. As you know, our salaries were $100 million. We're down to $70 million. We took that $30 million, invested in the farm system, and have gone about it in a direction that we're pleased with. But it's something that I guess when I look at it, I mean, we've got to follow through with what we said that we were going to do. We've got to have the patience. We've got to have the courage. And I think that we've got that situation. We've got an owner that understands, much like they do, and have been very supportive. But from the point of view, I think we've all got tough jobs. But when I say we, I speak collectively for myself and Alex, because I think it's Alex that's got the tougher job to do.
Brian Colangelo, do you have the toughest job?
Yeah, first of all, let me just say, we're calling you the Pat Riley of radio broadcasters right now. You brought the big three together, and I just want to be clear, I'm a distant third, so call me Chris Bosch. I think Brian Burke, to my left, has the toughest job. Because
why?
The power of the brand, the Maple Leafs, everybody talks about the impact on this market. It's clear that you know, there's pressure coming from different places, but pressure on the players, pressure on management, pressure on ownership all the time. But I would say the power of the brand is what makes it so impactful.
Burkey, is it you?
Yeah, I think so. But I think I have the best job in hockey, too. I think this... If you want to work for an original six team, you want to work in Canada. I think those are things you should aspire to as a general manager. And if you get that opportunity, you're one lucky guy. It means some tough days where you're walking uphill and it's raining in your face. There's 5 million people in the GTA, and every one of them thinks they know more about running this team than I do. Mm. But the passion's great, and it's just watching the building this year, how excited people got with some decent performances. This is a great hockey city.
Would you trade jobs with either of these two guys?
I don't know enough to do either one of their jobs. Like I've tried to, you know, Brian and I interact a bit. I've tried to learn some things from him. I've actually spent some time with his dad once. I don't know enough about basketball. I couldn't even answer Brian's phone. I wouldn't know the right things to say, and I certainly don't know enough about baseball. I know I was a lousy baseball player. I know that.
Am I allowed to call him Tall Brian? Because
we call him Tall Brian.
Tall,
yeah.
Brian, I found out. Yeah. Would you trade jobs?
For the record, I aspire to become both of them. First of all, I hope I'm living that long. But, you know, it's a tough business that we're in. You know, whatever the sport, whatever the dynamic, you know, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of different things that go into it. No, I had a chance at one point to go into baseball when my father got involved in
the Diamondbacks.
He said, what do you want to do here? Do you want to move into baseball and, you know, start from the ground up, or do you want to continue to pursue basketball? I said, I'm a basketball guy. So I enjoyed that experience. It was great. Baseball, no offense, it's a little slow for me. I like to see the impact and the speed of the game, you know, that we see in basketball.
Beeston, tell the truth.
No, I wouldn't change. I like what
tell
I'm doing.
Tell the truth.
No, I would not change. I like it. I like the fact we play 162 games. I like the fact that we don't have a lot of off days. And I like the fact, which is going to run counter to both of them, that we don't have a salary cap. Because when I think back as to who's got the tougher job, at least you can buy yourself out of your mistakes in baseball. And you can build it and you can look at it a little bit differently. The counter to that is that the players that we draft, the players that we actually bring into the system, I mean, are players that are probably, if they play well, are going to be 3 or 4 years. You have to project a lot different than you do perhaps in basketball and in hockey for those top-tier players. There's very few players, and I can think of the last one, maybe John Olerud, that actually never played a game in the minor leagues. You know, that just came up here. So the projection and the element of mistakes are so much higher because, quite frankly, you know, you're spending a lot of money and a lot of time on a lot of players that do not make it.
Yeah, but Brian Burke, your philosophy is, correct me if I'm wrong, that most players are best served by spending some time in the minors. So you have more of a developmental attitude than maybe some other general managers in hockey. Would you not agree?
Yes, and I do think my track record is I like guys to spend time in the American League. I think it humbles them. I think it makes them grateful for what they get after they get it. I think it's a real important learning curve in their development to go from junior or college hockey into professional hockey. And I think it's time well spent. I mean, you look at the guys that I sent to the minors, Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, Bobby Ryan. Now, these are all guys that Dustin Penner, these are all guys that, hey, you're spending time in the minors. And I think you become a better hockey player if you do. The rare, odd kid, like you say, Olerud, you know, Trevor Linden never spent time in the minors. Mm. There are kids who are ready to play at 18 and don't need that time, but they're few and far between.
Conversely, there are very few NBA players who spend time in the CBA and amount to much in the NBA.
We don't really have a true minor league system. There is the now NBA Developmental League I think has played an important part in some of these players coming in on call-ups and, you know, those signings that you can make at various points throughout the year. But it's very difficult to take a first-round pick and say, you know what, kid, we're going to send you down. People in the NBA are thinking more instant gratification. These kids have to come in, especially if you're a bad team. You want the guy to come in and get his feet wet right away and grow and develop. And that's why you see the emphasis of DeMar DeRozan playing so many minutes last year. You see what it did for him. It catapulted him forward. I don't think you know, we've got the luxury of either of these two sports. People need it now, and we've tried to speed that up.
Let me turn back the clock. You are 25 years old. Your education is complete. And there's no career path available to you to follow such as the path you have. In other words, there's no job leading you to baseball, no job leading you to basketball or to you to hockey. What do you do?
Well,
Brian Burke.
When I was 25, I was in law school. And I had no idea what I wanted to do. I didn't even want to go to law school. I got talked into that. So I had no idea. I remember my first day at Harvard Law School, a guy told me he wanted to be a litigator, and I didn't know what a litigator was. He said, what do you want to be? I said, I want to graduate. I had no career path. I tell people all the time, kids will say to me, you know, I was at 22, he's in the last year of university, so I have no idea what I want to be. I said, good, neither do I. I still don't know what I want to be in 10 years. So it's, you know, to me, I had no aspirations of playing pro hockey. I wasn't good enough. I started so late, but I got to do that, not very well, but I got to play and won a Calder Cup. I had no aspirations of working in hockey, but I got to do that. Like, this is just like a dream for me, the career path I've been able to put together. I feel very fortunate, but no, I didn't have any plans. 25 years old, I was in law school, sweating it out.
And even now, you can't, if you flashed back to be 25 years of age, is there something that you say, you know, if I couldn't do this, there's something I've discovered. Nothing?
Teach. I taught law school for 10 years while I was working for the Canucks.
Right.
I didn't take any money for it, did it because I enjoyed it. But what I've tried to do, and the advice I give young people is I've always tried to have as many options as I can every point I turn in my career. So my senior year in college, I've been accepted to Harvard Law School. The Flyers offered me a contract. Two pretty good options. Deferred my admission, signed with the Flyers, then go back. And to me, it's all about if you bust your ass and you're known as a hard worker and you're good at your job, you will always, I could go back and work for just about every employer I've ever worked for. going back to digging ditches because I was the hardest worker on the crew. So my goal has always been deliver and don't complain. Just get the job done, and you can always go back and work there. Most of the places I've worked, they'd have me back.
You're 25, Brian Colangelo. What do you do?
Real estate developer, eventually. Donald Trump was my business hero, if you will.
Mm.
I thought he had the secret to a lot of things, a lot of pomp and circumstance, but it's gotten him to where he's obviously an iconic brand for a number of reasons, some good, some bad. But the bottom line is real estate development was attractive to me. I wanted to see actually the downtown area in Phoenix built up more. I thought that it was a vibrant community. It lacked a downtown core. It was something that, you know, I was pursuing in summer jobs leading up to my graduation. And ultimately, I went into commercial real estate work in New York City. Spent 4 years there. Felt pretty good about it, but I got the call to come back and yeah. work in sports. But that was my path. That's where I was headed, and thought there was a lot of good things you could do with it.
Beeston.
I probably stay in accounting. I mean, at 25, I was a CA.
Yep.
I quite enjoyed it. I quite enjoyed the people I was working for. I quite enjoyed the work that I was doing. But as I reflect back on it and had the good opportunity to be asked to come down here, not apply for the job, at 31 years old, I felt I retired. I mean, I'm much like Berkey. Like, I had the greatest job in the world. I mean, you can't beat what this life has been. Every day is a Saturday. I look forward to getting up. I look forward to getting to work. And the whole thing is perfect. If I think back on my life, though, now, and I, you know, what you can do, I actually like the volunteer work. Unfortunately, volunteer work doesn't go with money.
No.
It's tough to live that way. I got fortunate in being involved in a great cause with the Center of Addiction and Mental Health.
Yes.
And for the 7 years that I was on that board, it was as rewarding as anything, including winning the World Series for what is happening, because you got an opportunity to make an impact on what's happening around the world. So all those things are all very, very exciting and all very, very good. But, Bob, I suspect I'd be in London, Ontario right now, seeing if I could get tickets at a stadium to watch a baseball game, a hockey game, a basketball game, and just enjoy myself.
Well, and to be honest, when you came to the Toronto Blue Jays, when the Blue Jays were born in 1977, you were the furthest thing from a baseball guy in the organization, correct?
No question, but I could talk a lot.
And you still can, so you haven't lost that
I was loud. I was loud. I had my opinions, and at the draft, I thought we should take Gates Brown.
Really?
Gates Brown first.
What's the biggest challenge in operating a sports franchise in this country where the majority of your competition and compatriots, the other franchises, are based in the United States? We hear anecdotally about the Canadian dollar, challenges in bringing players across the border, American-born players not understanding or having some fear of living in a foreign country where they think we might speak French and where the snow flies 11 months of the year. Is there one big challenge? Brian Colangelo, to you
well,
first.
To clarify, it's 10 months a year, right?
That's right.
You know,
well, it did snow a little yesterday. Yeah.
The I think the perception is the biggest challenge. You know, there's a perception that you know there's challenges that are insurmountable, and boy, I want to be more comfortable in a market that you know, especially with the demographics of our business and the makeup of our league. You know, you bring a kid out of the South, he might not be comfortable in a foreign country. And
sure.
Arguably, there are some things that are different here. At the same time, once they get here, for the most part, I think it's universally thought of as one of the most livable cities in the league. It's a great downtown core. People are friendly. The diverse culture that we live in is something I think that they're surprised by, again, so it's mostly perception, especially with contracts. I think on an apples-to-apples basis, we can make the numbers compare with the structure of the contracts. And, you know, the things that we do jump through to get back and forth to the States can be problematic at the border. You know, the customs and going through that on every road trip, being the only team up here. But having said that, it's not something that you look at and you say it's not, you can't get around it. It's something you just deal with, and hopefully we can find a better measure to get that done in the future.
I would think, Brian Berkey, you'd have the least trouble of the three guys in terms of luring players to Toronto, given that a significant number of the players are Canadian. The ones that are American, they're hockey players. They know that this is the epicenter of hockey. The European players are certainly well aware as well. I would think you'd have little trouble in saying, hey, it's Brian Burke from Toronto. Want to come?
Yeah, no, that I think people around the National Hockey League and worldwide respect Toronto as a great hockey city and a great place to live. There's no issues that way.
You used to have problems with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Well, that was early. I think as we got good, then, you know, there was no problem getting the players up here. I mean, we had the advantage of, you know, having teams that were going for the championship. So when we were looking to bring in the Paul Molitors or the Dave Winfields or the Dave Stewarts or anybody or retaining our players, we never lost them. I mean, we have an advantage here. I mean, it's a great city, as Brian Colangelo said. I mean, and in fact, for us and for Brian, we've got a great country. And, you know, we're basically trying to Canadianize the team and take it from coast to coast. And this year we had the good fortune, and, you know, when we were out in Calgary, we were out in Vancouver, the players were welcomed. But more importantly, they went to the hockey games. Drummond Gimli brings them in after they even had a loss into the dressing room. The whole thing was what worked out well. But from the point of view of getting players here, this is an asset. This city is an asset. And the one issue that you always come up with is the question of the customs. And, you know, as it is, we probably travel, you know, a little bit differently in the basketball team because we don't go for the one game road stands. You know, we go for, you know, a week or 10 days. And so it's a little bit different. We don't have that problem. But having said that, you know, these are not small planes these guys are driving, these guys are riding on. I mean, they're pretty good the way that they get to travel, and they don't stay in the local hotel on the outskirts.
So this is just off the top of my head, and I don't think I've ever thought of this before. I've never traveled with any of the teams. Do you guys get special treatment at customs? I mean, you basically breeze through. I mean, tell the truth.
No.
So you get the same hassles as John Q. Public?
Yeah.
Pretty much?
Yeah.
Wow.
Where we're grateful to Canada Customs is we come back a lot late at night, and they
stay open.
They come and meet the plane and collect all the forms and ask the same questions. But they are extremely helpful from a time standpoint. But no, they ask the same questions. I went through recently and went back and got my bag, and the guy climbed all over me. He said, "You can't go through and then go back." I said, "Well, I thought the bag was over here. It's not." And he was pretty sour at me. So they're very cooperative. We're grateful for that, but no, it's not, they don't wave you through. I can tell you that.
You didn't give them the, "Don't you know who I am?"
No, I didn't try that.
It doesn't always work with them. Sometimes they don't have the greatest sense of humor. More to come. One segment down. It's the presidential summit. Burke, Colangelo, Beeston in studio. Primetime will continue on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97. And Rogers Sportsnet.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Appropriate music for this group. I believe all of them come to work listening to this. The president and CEO of the Blue Jays, Paul Beeston, the president and general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Brian Burke, and the president, general manager of the Toronto Raptors, Brian Colangelo, all in the room. Now, here's something interesting. I don't think you guys even know this. What month are you born in, Beeston?
June.
Berkey?
June.
Colangelo?
June.
What year are you born in?
45.
55.
65.
Nice.
Very good research.
Who'd have thunk that, huh? Three guys. So you're getting together for your birthday? It's in June, by the way. You should.
House of Chan?
Like the old days, the old Doc.
Yeah, no kidding. We miss him, too. What's your second favorite sport? If you're sitting down in front of the television set, it's out of season, or you don't want to watch a game, you know, in your sport, what do you watch, Berkey?
Rugby.
Serious?
Yeah, I played rugby in law school, and for my first couple years practicing, I love rugby.
Colangelo?
I got to say probably tennis. I like watching men's tennis.
Is there a history to that? Do you play?
I did growing up a little bit, but you know, these guys are such well-conditioned athletes, and the grueling grind of a five-hour match. I used to go to the U.S. Open while living in New York, and it was fantastic. It was a great atmosphere, but I get into it. I'm excited about this young kid that's from Canada that's playing right now. It's nice to see.
Milos.
Yes. It's nice to see young talent excel like that.
Beast.
Definitely hockey. I mean, you know, the international brand. I mean, I love it when the Olympics are on. I love the World Championships. I mean, I like anything that's international. But, you know, being Canadian growing up, watching all the hockey, I just like to watch the game. Although, regrettably, from your point of view, I am fast becoming an aficionado and a lover of soccer. And you're not going to like that. I understand that. But soccer is a pretty interesting game to watch.
It's a good sport. All right. Well, so to that end, since you brought it up, when is the last time, and I want an honest answer here, when is the last time you watched a soccer game from beginning to end? Beeston.
World Cup. Maybe so.
Beginning to end.
Beginning to end.
Brian Colangelo.
I'm married to an Italian woman, and Inter Milan is on TV quite often, but beginning to end, probably World Cup 94, Brazil, Italy.
Wow, that's a long time ago, Berkey.
Never.
Never. That is the correct answer. The correct answer is never. It can't be done, really, can it?
I haven't done it.
Puts your feet to sleep, doesn't it?
We own a soccer team. I'm not going to run soccer. I know people love it, but I've never... Maybe if they put fighting in or something, I'd be more interested.
Oh, good.
By the way, it was at the Rose Bowl. That's why I watched it. I had no choice, right?
Well, that doesn't count, really. Who would you say is your most trusted confidant? You got a situation. You got to talk to somebody. You can't figure it out for yourself. Who do you talk to? Brian Burke first.
On staff?
Could be anybody.
Well, it'd be Dave Nonis, but off staff, if I was going to call a hockey guy and needed an opinion, which you do from time to time, you're thinking of making a trade, you're not really sure, I would call Lou Lamoriello or Glenn Sather. They're two guys I respect.
And does in the hockey community, do you guys can talk candidly, share ideas and information?
Yeah, and the only obligation you have is that if you're in on that same deal, you've got to disclose that right away and say, hey, stop right there because we're in on that guy. And that'll happen. Like it happened to me with Paul Holmgren last year. We were both in on the same. And I called him and said, you know this guy a little better than I do. You know what you're thinking. He said, stop right there. He said, we're in on that one too.
Oh, I see.
So, I think you can trust the group to give you honest advice, what they think. And sometimes you do need to go outside your organization. Sometimes your organization gets focused on something and they're only looking at it from one angle. And you got someone who's standing on the opposite side of the street looking at it. Sometimes it's helpful to just say, what about this? Mm. I remember I called Cliff. When I was a rookie GM in 1992, I was a GM in Hartford, and I got a trade offer from Slats, from Glenn Sather, for Jeff Sanderson. And I didn't know this player. I was a brand new GM. I didn't know the player. So I called Cliff, and I said, I have a chance to make a trade, move Jeff Sanderson. He said, have a cold drink, walk around the block, and forget all about it. And I said, why? And he said, because you don't know what you have there. This guy had 14 goals the year before. He had 46 that year for us. So we hung on to him. We ended up with 46 goals, explosive player, great kid. But that was Cliff, giving me a real honest answer. Not trying to hijack the deal. Just say, forget about it. Keep the kid. And it was great advice.
Beast.
Well, obviously Herbie Solway. I mean, he's been around since 76, so I think that's the obvious answer for any of the kind of business or value questions that one might have. I've had a couple of good mentors over the years, and Peter Hardy obviously was one before that. When I actually have a real problem or an issue, or I want to just go and get some straight answers, I mean, it's Solway. If it comes to the baseball part of it, be either Lucchino or Jerry Reinsdorf. I mean, I talk to them, two or three times a week, and I always have. Even when I was out of baseball, I talk to them. I can always get an honest answer from them. And more importantly, they'll never tell me just exactly what I want to hear. They'll tell me this is the pluses, the minuses, what you want to do, and why we should be doing the way that things are. We don't very rarely agree, but at the same time, I think we have honest answers. And that's what you want. I mean, you want somebody who's going to tell you the way they see it, and I think those are them.
And you'd never call Stan Kasten because he's not trustworthy.
Well, Stan, no, because I'd like to have a word in, too. You've got to be able to talk sometime.
Which is impossible. Brian Colangelo.
Wayne Embry, years of experience, has seen it all, done it all, and first ever African American general manager. He's gone through the real trials, and then obviously off staff, I've got the best in the business.
Jerry, I was going to say
Jerry Colangelo.
You talk to Pops
all the time, all the time. In college, it was always when I needed something. At least that's what he would say.
Yeah.
Later on, it was when he would breeze through the office. I might see him occasionally working for him. But now, he's the guy that understands and knows the business better than anyone. So it's easy.
You guys talk business with your wives?
Yeah, I do all the time.
Do you?
Yep.
Like, give me a sample. I mean, is it a daily basis? You say all the time? Will you ask her stuff, or will she interject?
Both.
Both?
Both.
So it's a constant dialogue.
Yeah, she's very bright. She knows this business. You know, she's been in broadcasting her whole adult life.
And sure.
She understands our business. So, constantly.
Constantly. Brian?
Same. All the time. I think more than anything, it's her ability to read people. It's incredible. Not just with me, but with everybody. I mean, she has an ability to know and understand situations, but she also understands the sport. She used to be a sports writer years ago and ended up working with the NBA before we got married. So,
Paul?
Yeah, I mean, not on a constant basis, but on a regular basis. I mean, my wife would see 35, 40 games a year. I mean, she goes to a lot of games and has been doing that since 1977. She has her opinions on players. She has her opinions on the way we should be doing things. Sometimes it's a discussion. Sometimes, you know, I listen and I tell her this is
why
we're doing things.
Do you ask
or
does she just tell you?
No. I ask sometimes, but sometimes she suggests. But she's very understanding because, you know, when you've been in it for a lot, you do have to have an understanding wife. Because the demands, and I mean, this isn't a thing that just starts, you know, from 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock at night. I mean, this is 24 hours a day. And, you know, with the exception of perhaps Christmas, it's 364 days a year. And so if you don't have an understanding wife, you don't have an understanding family, it could make it so it would be unbearable. So, I mean, we're all fortunate in having wives that do understand that.
So to that end, every once in a while, you have to take time for your wife. And you don't want to take her to a basketball game, a hockey game, or a baseball game. They get to do that whenever they want to. What's the most likely thing that you guys would do on a date night with your wife? Brian Colangelo.
You know, nothing special.
Dinner and a movie?
Yeah, you know, something like that. But it doesn't happen often.
No?
Generally, we're always with the kids.
Ah.
Yeah.
Same. Brian Burke, same?
We went away this year. It was the first time since we met in 1998 that we went away without kids or hockey, you know, going to an all-star game or something. We actually went away to the Bahamas for 4 days. It was great. If we get a night off and we try to see people in the community that we don't get to see often enough, try and have dinner with another couple maybe. But if it's a date night, dinner and a movie's nice.
Date night.
Dinner with friends. I mean, that's what it is. You know, we quite regularly do that. But, you know, it's a Saturday night. But, you know, in the old days, when I was unemployed there for 7 years, it would be the theater, you know, and travel. And it doesn't happen. And it's interesting to hear Brian say it because, you know, you just don't travel. I mean, it's a different lifestyle. And, you know, you spend so much time in a plane that it's difficult to get on that plane and fly somewhere.
One more before the break. Night game for Blue Jays. Well, night game for the Raptors, too. There are very few afternoon games, if any, for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Tough loss. Really tough loss. Do you take it home?
Yeah.
Brian Burke.
Yeah.
You do, huh?
My kids know.
You must be a pain after those, huh?
Yeah, I am. I don't like losing. Show me anyone that likes losing, and they won't be successful. I don't like it. I don't take it lightly. I take it home. And my kids, they know. You get in the car, we're driving home, it's going to be a quiet ride, and just let me brood.
How long to get over it?
Well, it depends. I mean, sometimes you lose to a team that plays really well and earns the win, and sometimes you hand it to them. The ones that where you hand it over, or your special teams let you down and you lose, those are the ones that don't go away. The ones, hey, some nights, you're not going to win every game. No team's ever done it in our league. No one's ever. Yeah. So you're not going to win every game. So, okay, we have to adjust and accept some losing. But it's the ones where you gave the other team that victory, especially in the playoffs, where you hand someone a victory. Those, you remember those years later. Years later. I remember we were up 3-1 on the Minnesota Wild 1 year in Vancouver. We blew that lead and lost a game 7 at home. And I still hate that building in Minnesota from that series, even though we won a series in there with Anaheim. I still hate that building because I think back to losing that game 6 and how much momentum we had just handed them And I was sure as hell we were going to lose game seven, and we did. So that, you can tell, it bothers me now even talking about it.
You know, I can hear. Loss bother you? You go home and forget about it.
No, no. We have an advantage over both basketball and hockey, though, is we play the next day. I mean, you know, we've lost three in a row. We went tomorrow night and we forgot those three. You know, a game like today, though, will kill you.
Yeah.
But the 3-2 games or the 6-5 games, those are ones that you really hurt. And, you know, like, you know, it was tough to get over a 7-0 lead last week. And you think about it, as I've got older, I've found that I'm having more trouble getting over losses.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's
worse,
not one of those.
Better.
Yeah, it's not getting any better. It's not getting any better. In fact, I think it's getting worse. I mean, you know, you think about it, you don't sleep, you're, well, what if, you know, who couldn't do this? You know, you know, all the preparation you can do. And yet, like Brian says, sometimes you're going to get beat. Somebody's just going to pitch a lights out game, and, you know, you're not going to ever win that game. But, you know, it's tough.
Brian Colangelo, can you walk away?
Unfortunately, no. You bring it home every night. And, you know what, for me, I've been doing this since as long as I can remember. My father being involved in the business from the time when I was two, when we moved out to Phoenix, and he was the lead guy there at the time in 68. 45 years, a season has not passed where I haven't had to live through the 82 games. It's not just the home games that you drive home with. It's the road games that you're either there in the building or you're watching on TV. And, you know, the kids know.
Yeah.
They do know.
If they don't know the score, they know as soon as they see you, huh? The break, and then one more segment. We've got a bunch of quick things to talk about when we come back. Burke, Colangelo, Beeston in studio, and Primetime continues in a moment on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
With Brian Burke, Brian Colangelo, and Paul Beeston. Which sport is most likely to establish a foothold outside of North America first? We have heard, you know, the NBA has been noodling around in Europe. Hockey has been noodling around in Europe. Major League Baseball now has some European footing, but of course it's been popular in Japan and the Caribbean and in South America, etc. Which one is the first one to put a franchise someplace other than North America? Brian Colangelo's leaning in. He's got a definitive
answer. Yeah, I don't think it's close. I think basketball. It's probably recognized globally as a world sport. And, you know, the broadcast deals that we have in place, we're in some 140 countries. And, you know, Heidi Ueberroth at the league office is doing great work expanding things internationally. And the, you know, it's a major point of emphasis for David Stern and Adam Silver at the league office with their goals in terms of growing the brand.
Best guess, where do you think that franchise is?
Somewhere in Europe.
In Europe? Not China?
No, somewhere
in spite of the popularity of the game there.
Europe.
Time frame?
5 to 10 years.
Mm. Brian Burke, do you think it's basketball or do you think it's you guys?
I don't think it's us. I don't know if it's... Brian knows a lot more about basketball than I do. I would guess that intuitively, I think he's right. For us, the biggest single problem is the buildings in Europe don't generate NHL economics. In terms of the seating capacity, suites, what they charge for tickets, they cannot support the economics of having an NHL team there. That's changing. Like the new building in Prague could probably generate those kind of dollars, but like the Globen Arena in Stockholm, it's 14,000 seats. No, too small. It's a full contact sport we play. If you go over there, you'd want to play at least, you know, like the same thing when the league sends us out west. I want to play 4 to 6 games every time we go out west. I don't want to go out west and play 3 games. So now you're on the road. What's the circuit? You know, you play back to back in Stockholm. Do you go Stockholm, Prague, Helsinki? It's years and years away. And we've got to worry about the predatory effect it would have on those leagues. We get a lot of players from those
leagues. Yeah, that's right.
If you take out the building in Stockholm, there are two teams that play there, Djurgården and AIK. Where do they go? And what would the damage be to that league that's produced so many wonderful players for us? So there's lots of problems. I can't see it happening, you know, in the near future at all.
Where's baseball?
I don't think it'll happen for baseball. I mean, it certainly wouldn't be in Europe, you know, but we could have a genuine World Series. You know,
well,
we could play
East.
the champion of the Japanese League. I mean, you know, Japanese League plays 140 games. They have stadiums that would hold major league crowds. The economics are right because baseball sells a lot of time over there already. So that part of it, I think, works, Bob. But it's not likely to happen for baseball. I just don't see that happening. Notwithstanding the fact that, you know, I think that there are something like 19 countries represented in Major League Baseball this year.
Here's a question I don't know the answer to. Every year, Taiwan wins a Little League World Series.
What happens to those players?
Well, when these guys get to be 13, do they forget about baseball? What happens?
I don't know. They go to Williamsport, they get the trophy, they go home,
and,
we don't hear from them anymore.
The last we heard of them.
That's right.
You know, years ago, the Blue Jays organization opened up the Dominican Republic as a source for scouting. Maybe you ought to send somebody over there to find the 13-year-olds from Taiwan.
Well, no,
meet the plane going home.
Yeah, no, it hasn't worked. I mean, you know, it's remarkable how many years they've won it, and it's how many years that, you know, they've never put a guy in the major leagues. You know, they're coming from Korea, they're coming from Japan, they do not come from Taiwan, and quite strange. It is quite strange when you think about it.
Quickly around the table, in your sport. Does your sport need more instant replay, Beeston?
Yes.
Specifically?
I think we just need some. You
don't want to go to balls and strikes?
No, never balls.
What about out at on the bases? Safer out?
I don't think so. I mean, about trap plays, if you could ever get a good camera angle on it. I think to try to get it right, I think, is the right thing to do, but not balls and strikes, and I don't think we need the else on the bases.
Brian Colangelo in basketball.
First of all, I'd be happy to see a replay in the stadium.
Yeah.
A lot of times. But, you know, probably we've done a good job. Brian and I talk about this a little bit, how we've expanded the instant replay rules. I think we've done a good job, but it is a Pandora's box, and you got to be careful. I'm sure Oklahoma City and last night Denver, if you saw that game and you saw the ability of Perkins to knock in the ball, it was clearly goaltending.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, you know, now the league had to issue a statement today. That could have been solved if we had instant replay for that particular situation. Again, late in the game and in a vital play. But we can always do a little more, but you got to be very careful because it's a slippery slope.
What would a challenge system work in basketball?
We talked about it at times. You know, what do? Give the coach a towel to throw on the floor?
Well, whatever. That's what they do in the NFL.
I know. It'd be difficult, and I don't think that would work.
Throw a cheeseburger out or something. Hockey, more, no. Same, less.
It's
happy
fine.
With where it is.
Yep.
You guys have done the best job. I don't say that very often about hockey in the NHL, but you guys have done the best job with instant replay.
You've got to really be careful where you start and stop.
Yeah.
You know, taking that out of the hands of the officials.
All right, quickly around the table, a bunch of bullets. Favorite movie, Beeston? If you had to sit down and watch it for the 10th time, what would it be?
Dirty Dozen.
Brian Colangelo.
Godfather.
Oh, yeah.
Monday, best Tuesday, year. Thursday, Wednesday.
This is the best.
Brian Burke.
Breaker Morant.
Who?
No one's ever heard of it. It's about execution of a couple of Australian soldiers in the Boer War.
Really?
It's a fantastic movie.
Okay, I'll watch for it. You're sitting in front of your television set. Let me phrase this differently. One show that you'd PVR in case you might miss it. Is there one television show that has you hooked? Brian Colangelo goes first this way.
Dexter.
Wow. I watched Dexter. It's an interesting show. It's a little bizarre premise. You would like Dexter, wouldn't you?
I know our coaches watch Dexter. I'm not a big TV guy. If I had to PVR a show, Law and Order.
The original?
Yeah, I don't like these other
ones. The spinoffs.
And I'm not a big TV guy, so I would not.
None?
I would not even hazard a guess. I'd have to go back to Kojak.
I better do it politically correct. I would PVR my wife doing the news.
Oh, nice.
How's that
good
for sucking
save.
Up?
Good save.
Last question. And everybody's asked this one, but I'm interested in the answers in this room. You can have dinner with any three people. Tonight, living or dead, the dead guys would be quiet, but they'd be there. Who'd you have dinner with? Paul Beeston first.
Abraham Lincoln. Shakespeare. And quickly off the top of my head, I guess Winston Churchill.
All historical figures.
Mm-hmm. But I've read about all of them, and I love Shakespeare. And I've never known anyone could use the language, and if you read... what Abraham Lincoln wrote. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, he's as good as any writer that this comes
the through. Lincoln Papers, right?
It's just unbelievable. I mean, with this, how this person's mind worked.
Dinner for three. Who's there? Well, dinner for four. You and who else, Brandberg? Well,
historical figures for me would be Churchill, Lincoln. I'm a huge fan of both. I've read volumes on both of them. And then George Washington, who was an amazing man. As far as people alive, Bruce Allen, if he wouldn't be listening to this, but Bruce Allen's a rock promoter. Michael Bublé's agent, friend of mine for years. Guy's the most entertaining guy I know. And then sports, I'd say Ned Colletti and Bill Polian.
That table got real big in a hurry. You got about 10 seconds.
I was going to say, I'll be easy. Magic, Michael, and Larry. Sit back and listen to a lot of stories, but... historical, got to put Leonardo da Vinci at the table, right?
Well, your wife will be appreciative of that mention, too,
it's
I suspect.
It's got three syllables in the name.
Right. Yeah.
There, so.
Gentlemen, thanks a lot. Hopefully this was painless for all of you and enjoyable for the rest of us. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do it again. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you soon. Good night from Toronto.